Whoever you are, wherever you have come from, and whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Elaine Bowen, and I am serving as the worship associate for today's service, and I am joined by a lay service leader, Deb Biggins. Lay-led services are a time-honored Unitarian Universalist tradition. We believe that the Sunday service is best reflected in a variety of voices and experiences. We're glad to have you with us this morning. We hope you find something in the service today that nourishes your spirit and helps you find and then keep your balance. Our minister, the Reverend Melissa Carvel-Zemer, will return to the pulpit next Sunday. And in the spirit of further hospitality, please greet those who are seated near you and take note of their red-edged tag, which has a silent disability written on it. That is how you live for at least the next hour, and we hope for the rest of the day today that you will take some time to think about those who live with these silent disabilities. If it is something that you don't understand, I suggest that perhaps you research it, or if you're cyber savvy, Google it and learn a little bit more about some of the silent disabilities that people around us live with every day. We are glad you are here today, and I also want to thank our guest musicians who are here. We have Tim Starin on violin and Randall Fusco on the piano. Their bios are in the order of service, and we thank Hal Walker for arranging for them to be with us today. If you may notice that we have a number of empty seats today, it is the beginning of the OMD, Ohio Meadville District Summer Institute, today down on the campus of Kenyon College in Gambier, Ohio. And this congregation typically has the highest per capita rate of attendance at SI in our entire district. So I'm sure there are many people who are already on their way traveling down to Kenyon for a week of fun, fellowship, worship, and a wonderful time. We'll tell you more about it later.
Every day brings struggle. Every day brings joy. Every day brings us the opportunity to ease the struggle of another, to be the joy in another's life. May this flame remind us to carry our light to each other and to the world.
Recently, I attended the Unitarian Universalist Association General Assembly in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the end of June. I'm a shopper, and I was drawn to the exhibit hall. And one of the first things I spotted was a booth with absolutely beautiful framed artwork drawn from all different faith traditions. And I have as a personal mantra my belief that in the end, only kindness matters. And this one piece of art drew me in because it said, "Be kind." And in smaller script, it said, "For everyone you meet is fighting a great battle." It is attributed to a first century Jewish philosopher by the name of Philo of Alexandria. And I thought about that in terms of this service. Be kind. I wondered how many times that I've been frustrated watching someone walk very slowly through a crosswalk when I've been in a hurry and sitting in my car thinking to myself, come on, come on, come on, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. I have things to do and places to go. How many times have I been frustrated by someone who is not moving at the speed I think they should? But that's based on my perception of what I need, not what is best for them. How many times have I been frustrated by people who don't understand mood disorders or my struggles with depression and anxiety? How many times have I gotten angry when I've seen people give my sons the look that says, what's wrong with them? Why aren't they acting normal? To which I say, what is normal for somebody with Asperger's syndrome or living on the autism spectrum? Food for thought this morning. And as we come into worship together in this place of kindness and gentle spirits, I ask you to remember the words of Philo of Alexandria. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. Come, let us worship together in love, compassion, and understanding. I chose for our unison mission this morning the independent clause that sits in between some beautiful verbiage in our Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent mission, because this is the part I find the most important. The rest is beautiful. This is the guts. So please, with understanding and feeling, we will repeat it slowly 3 times. Our mission is to lead caring lives of meaning and purpose. Our mission is to lead caring lives of meaning and purpose. Our mission is to lead caring lives of meaning and purpose. Please join me now in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and of love, please bless us with compassion. Compassion to understand that which we do not understand, but that we have the willingness to learn about, so that we may offer our hearts and our hands to help those who have struggles. For those who are challenged, may they know that there are those with open hearts and willing hands to help. We know the words. We know we are called to respect the inherent worth and dignity of all people. All people. Amen. And blessed be.
Good morning. My name is Meg Milko, and Deb Biggins is my partner. And this morning I want to just touch very briefly and on the surface of what it's like to live with someone with disabilities, especially silent disabilities. There's definitely a learning curve when you live with someone with a silent disability. Some of Deb's disabilities were things I'd never heard of when I met her, had very little exposure to them. Wasn't something I could see very easily and readily, so sometimes it's hard to remember that the person has any type of issue at all. It's hard when you realize that there's limitations and there's things that you won't be able to do, but we've taken the time to figure those things out. It does affect our relationship at times, but everybody brings something to a relationship and affects it. It's not just Deb's disability. I realized it's our disability. It's things that affect me and that touch me and that I have to learn to accommodate or figure out. Disabilities affect everyone around us. When Deb has a bad day, I have a bad day. But I don't have a bad day because we couldn't do something that we had planned or wanted to do. That's a little part of it. Yes, everyone has that selfish need, like, oh, sorry, I can't go to the zoo today or whatever. But it's just hard for me because I can't take away whatever's happening with her. I'm powerless to fix it. It's not something I can do anything about except be supportive. I can't change it. I can just learn to live with it, just as she has. I feel sorry for her that she's feeling down and has a bad day. I want to take away that pain and frustration for the both of us, but I've learned we just have to ride it out. Some things that helped me were immediately learning all I could about her disabilities. I researched, I asked her questions, I over time have talked to her doctors. I also came up with some ideas for her and I to have a little bit better communication. One of the things that she did that at first, and I still struggle with it, it's very frustrating for me, is that when I ask her what's wrong, her answer 9 times out of 10 is, I don't know. And I feel that answer in my past, when someone says, I don't know, and shrugs their shoulder, has been dismissive. And it means, they don't want to tell you, whatever, don't worry about it, whatever. And with her and I can't accept that. I want to know, what is it, what's wrong? So I've kind of learned in Deb's world and in her language, I don't know really means I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I have several complications and things in my body and in my mind. And at this moment, I can't sort through them to even begin to tell you what's wrong. So again, I learn I need to be patient. And in time, it kind of figures itself out. I sometimes can realize it might be the tag I have on today says vertigo, because that's the one I struggle with the most. I can't see it. I don't know it. I have no power over the weather, but the weather affects her tremendously. So if a weather low pressure is coming through, I know we're not going to have a good day or two. I just know it, and I've started to figure those things out on my own. One thing that I can say about Deb is she's very independent, almost to a fault. She wasn't used to telling anyone what was going on with her. She never wanted to talk about her pain management at first. If her doctors were adjusting her medication in any way, she would never even think to tell me about it. She just never had that kind of relationship or support in the past. And, of course, I want to know everything. So I found that very hard, because even though she wouldn't tell me something was changed, I could tell. Her personality changes dramatically. She's very much affected my medication. So if the doctors change something, I start to see it manifest in other ways. And I was getting very concerned about that. So I struggled with trying to deal with giving her her privacy and figuring out her medical things on her own. But then I realized, no, she's my partner and this affects me as well. And I should have somewhat of a say in what's going on. I encouraged her at those times to talk to her doctor and let them know, this isn't working for me. Whatever you just adjusted and tweaked is changing my personality in other ways we could not even imagine. So we need to go back to where we were and start over, or just figure it out differently. That's helped a lot. Also, by taking control of her health and pain management, I found that's gotten me a lot more involved and engaged in her struggle and in her care, and it gave me back some of that power that I was missing, because I felt so powerless, as I mentioned earlier, to do anything. Now I felt like I had a little bit of power. I was working with her and with her doctors and trying to figure it out, and at least I had a little bit of control over some small aspect of her disabilities. It also helps to have someone to talk to, or in my case, someone to vent to. I just need to vent and get it all out. And again, it's not that I'm mad at Deb. Not at all. I'm more angry with the disease or the disability and what it's doing for us and how it affects us. It's not fair, but there's nothing I can do about it. Some of the disorders and some of the things that many of you are going to live with today have their own support group, and I would highly suggest, if you suffer with that or struggle or know someone, to get involved with those groups. It really helps to be involved with other people that are going through with what you're going through, and it's affected their life. And it's nice to know that someone else understands the frustrations that go along with living with someone with a disability. One thing that I have learned over the time I've been with Deb is that we need to thoroughly enjoy our good, symptom-free days. You need to cherish those, grab hold of them, rearrange your schedule. When she's having a good day, it's time to just get up and go. We'll go to the zoo today. We'll take the dog out to the park. We're going to do what we are able now to do that we couldn't do last weekend for whatever reason. So I found that I do enjoy those moments, and I know better days are coming, and it helps me hang in there. Over time, I don't like it, but I've kind of gotten used to Deb's silent disabilities. I am lucky that she is so strong-willed, and she doesn't let this get the best of her. I can probably guarantee 90% of you have no idea there's a thing wrong with her, because she, you know, from just seeing us come to church, you would have no idea. But that's the type of person she is. She really doesn't want anyone to feel sorry for her or treat her any differently. When we do have a bad day, we try to make up for it as soon as possible. I think that's very important. I also have come to think of Deb's issues as episodal illnesses. If I can get through that, I know better days are coming. It was too overwhelming for me to think that this is something we're going to live with forever. Forever is far too long. By realizing this is one episode and we can get through this one episode, she and I can handle that. So I think together we've been managing her silent disabilities quite well.
Hi, I'm Kat, and I'm disabled. A lot of people, I'm sure, look at me and just think that I'm a fat, lazy slob who should just get up and exercise. Few people know the details of my collection of medical conditions and disabilities, which make most daily activities, let alone exercising, extremely difficult. I've had a bad heart valve since childhood, which causes difficulty breathing and dizziness when I walk up steps. My asthma is triggered by exertion and cigarettes and fragrances and can be debilitating. My progressing arthritis causes a bizarre collection of pains that vary from moment to moment and can be tolerable one day and incapacitating the next. I don't like pointing out my disabilities. I don't like not being able to do everything, and sometimes I just push myself too much and suffer the consequences. At times, I do use a cane, and when I do, I get lots of attention and assistance that I don't even request. In a touristy place like the New York theaters, my cane prompted staff to guide me to this unmarked network of alternate entrances and handicap facilities. Without the cane, these options remain a mystery for me to figure out on my own. So this requires a lot of advanced planning and prevents me from being too spontaneous. For any activity, I have to consider, will there be stairs? How far away is parking? How much walking is required? How tired will it make me? Will there be smokers or incense or other fragrances? If I can't find out, then I take the risk of being in a situation that I can't participate in and will probably have to leave. Often it's safer just to choose not to go at all. Sometimes all the planning fails. Years ago, I reserved a hotel in New York City with a price that was too good to be believed. First problem. I checked the website and it appeared accessible and looked lovely. I even called ahead to make sure that they had elevators and would be accessible. They assured me they were. However, when I got there, the entrance to the hotel was at the top of a long flight of stairs that led from the street. As I stood there with my luggage, wondering just what to do, one of the homeless guys grabbed my bag and ran up the steps. I had no choice but to go after him and hope that this was his money-making scheme and not a desire for my luxurious wardrobe, and that he would still be there when I struggled to the top. He was, and I gave him some money and then confronted the lady at the desk about the stairs and the elevator. She just pointed to the elevators in the lobby and said, "There they are." I had to move to another hotel, one that was accessible and decidedly less creepy. I recently, very politely, spoke to the owner of a local laundromat who had installed several of those automatic air fresheners. It may seem petty to complain about air fresheners, but an asthma attack can take several hours to recover from, and often the fatigue the next day is overwhelming, and with some incidents, it may take days to recover from. So I can get pretty jumpy when someone with a cigarette or a spray can gets a little too close. I educated the owner about asthma and fragrance sensitivities. The next week, these air fresheners were gone. Later, I was pleased to learn that there had been several other complaints. It took all of our voices to make that change and educate a business about these issues. Many times, I feel like I'm being whiny and complaining. I don't want to be whining and complaining. I used to not say anything. There are many people with disabilities who are afraid to speak up. They may be too proud to admit their limitations. They may be embarrassed. They may be afraid of being left out. They may be afraid of creating a fuss or making things complicated. They don't want to be a bother or appear to be whiny and complaining. Or they think that asking for special treatment is inconvenient. I began noticing that others whom I knew had some special needs or restrictions weren't saying anything and allowing themselves to be put into potentially dangerous situations. I decided to start speaking up for myself in a way to also assist other people. Often it's a simple matter of moving a meeting to a different room or removing the scented candles. I know now that when I speak up, I'm speaking not only for me, but for many others who don't feel that they can. For me, this is a social justice issue.
I have a confession to make. This is something I have only ever said once before, and I said it to Evan and Grant's dad, my spouse, Bill. Evan and Grant are fraternal twins who are now 22 years old. They are our only children. They were diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder about 18 years ago. I don't like the word autism. I don't like it at all. I don't like that my children live an atypical life. We don't use the word normal in our house. We use things in terms of typical or atypical or simply Evan and Grant as they are. The confession I have to make was something that came out of my mouth one day, and I had to say it. I wish they had a disability that was visible. Why couldn't they have had Down syndrome, where someone looking at them could say, yes, there's a disability? Why couldn't they have had one of the disabilities that my family at Hattie Larlem have? The obvious contractures, the obvious deformities, the things that are obvious that people understand a little bit better. In the first years of our autism diagnosis, there are the looks, and I think you probably know what I mean, when an assistant manager of a McDonald's tells me that my children don't belong there because they're not controllable, to the woman in my orthopod's waiting room when the boys were 12 and I had a cast on this wrist and I was assisting Evan in tying his shoe, and a woman said to me and to Evan, he's old enough to be able to do that by himself. You don't need to be helping him. Let him do it himself. And I'm fighting back my Irish temper and trying to think of a kind and compassionate way to get through this situation when my son turned to her and said, it's okay, lady. I've almost got it. I've been working on this. Yay, Evan. Over the years, I have become a reluctant advocate. It's not something I ever anticipated. It's not something I initially embraced, but I had to. And Bill will tell you that at some point I had to be dragged kicking and screaming into it because I went through all of my stages of grief and denial with the tag of ASD that my boys walk through life with. At that same time, I was struggling with a new diagnosis long overdue of severe chronic dysthymia, which is a depressive state complicated by an anxiety disorder. Oh, yay, what fun our house was. There was a lot of understanding that needed to be done. There was a lot of therapy, a lot of work, a lot of tears. We still deal with the looks, especially when I've got a 6 foot and a 5 foot 10, 300 pound hulking pair on either side of my shortness going into a G-rated animated movie, and you get the, what are you doing here? Aren't you a little bit old for this? And there's chronological age, there's developmental age, there's emotional age, there's all kinds of ages. And no, Evan and Grant and I are not too old for that G-rated animated movie. We like to think that it's a place where there are no disses, there are only abilities. That's our story. Part of it. It's still being written. It gets very, very difficult some days. But as Meg says, we rejoice in the days when things are more typical than they are atypical. And really, what makes it all work? It's love. Just love.
It's my turn. Good morning. I'm Deb Biggins, and although I'm fairly new to the church, I love it, and found it to be very warm and welcoming. When I heard the request to go out for lay-led services, I felt compelled to share with you my insights and observations about what I like to call silent disabilities. I had much help putting the service together. I want to thank Lois Weir and Elaine Bowen for their help and guidance there and for the readings. Silent disabilities are the ones, like people have said before, that we cannot see with our eyes, but they're very real to those who have them. You could be born with a silent disability or develop one later in life. Personally, I suffer from Meniere's disease, dysthymic disorder, PTSD, degenerative arthritis, and lower back pain. I have had Meniere's disease since birth, and the others came along later in life. Meniere's disease is an inner ear imbalance that causes vertigo. So I guess you could say I'm a little unbalanced. That one I inherited from my grandmother, and thanks, Grandma. Dysthymic disorder is chronic depression. And my PTSD, degenerative arthritis, and lower back problems came from the time of my service in the Army. While you cannot see any of these things, believe you me, I sure can feel them, and I experience them every waking moment. While most of those are controlled and managed, they still limit my abilities. You may have noticed or may not that someone sitting around you have silent disabilities. You notice the tags people are wearing. Funny thing is about silent disabilities, they are very real, just like the paper name tags some of us are wearing. But sometimes no one notices them. Some other silent disabilities people suffer from are anxiety, lupus, epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, bipolar disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, fibromyalgia, diabetes, Crohn's disease, autism and Asperger's disorders, pulmonary fibrosis, COPD, deafness, CHF, depression, celiac disease, and the list goes on. With so many silent disabilities around us and touching our lives every day, I believe it's our responsibility to become more aware of those around us and more compassionate about their limitations, their needs, and their restrictions. As conscientious UUs, we are guided to follow some basic tenets. We are taught to accept one another, respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part of, and in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, not just the healthy ones. Just because someone doesn't go out to the after-church luncheon some of you like to go to doesn't mean they're antisocial. Perhaps they suffer from celiac disease or Crohn's disease. Maybe they have IBS, and it's difficult to be away from home for a meal. I mean, really, who wants to have to explain IBS when it happens? sometimes very quickly, and when you happen to eat the wrong food, it's just easier to decline the invitation. So many people are following gluten-free diets these days and only eating foods with no chemicals. While this is a good practice, helps us appreciate organically grown foods, it might also be a decision made for a medical reason, perhaps a silent disability. As I mentioned earlier, I felt compelled to lead this service because of a personal incident that happened to me after I had my second back surgery in April. While I didn't need to use the cane any longer, I still had some strict limitations. I was going to class at Akron U, and if any of you know the campus, it's next to impossible to park anywhere close to a building. So my doctor prescribed a handicap placard for me so that I could park closer. Well, since one of my major restrictions was that I could not walk for long distances yet. As I was walking from my car, someone walked past me and asked me why I was parking there. And then they said that I wasn't disabled. I just love when other people tell you what you are. When I told them I recently had back surgery and couldn't walk far distances, they acted like they didn't believe me. So, me being me, I whipped up the back of my shirt and showed them my scars. They said, oh, and walked away quickly. Sometimes you just have to show them. My wish for all of us is to not be so quick to judge someone, to make assumptions. And we all know what happens when we assume. So the next time you're out and about and you notice someone using handicapped parking and they don't look handicapped, don't assume. The next time someone begs off for church from going to lunch, don't assume. And the next time someone complains about one of their invisible illnesses, don't assume. In closing, I leave you these words from Charles Horton Cooley. The chief misery of the decline of the faculties and a main cause of the irritability that often goes with it is evidently the isolation. The lack of customary appreciation and influence, which only the rarest tact and thoughtfulness on the part of others can alleviate.